Hello, and thanks you so much for joining us. You are watching Deprogram with Ted Rall and Jamarl Thomas. Today is Wednesday. It is 12 noon Eastern Time, and because it's either a Monday or a Wednesday at 12 Eastern Time, we bring you a special Q&A show. Q&A show is where you can ask us anything and anything, everything you want, and unless it's obscene, and maybe even if it is obscene, we will answer you. Today's show is going to be a little bit different than usual. Producer Robbie West, who you see over on the left side of your screen, but not left, not politically, will be sitting in for Jamarl Thomas, but only for the first 30 minutes of the show. Jamarl's got something going on, international man of mystery. I think he's negotiating peace between Iran and the United States. That's going to be done by 12:30. We will have the Strait of Hormuz open by 12:32. So that'll be good for the stock markets. You heard it here first. Go ahead and buy lots of Ethereum. Okay, so we will be answering your questions. Put them in the live chat if you're watching 12 noon, either on Rumble or on YouTube. Jamarl will be here at 12:30. We'll keep you up to date on his progress. At that point, Robbie will still be here, but paying a little more attention to the chats, but still paying attention to the chats. And I guess I'm going to help a little bit out here in terms of trying to answer the questions. But anyway, that's about that. Please like, follow, and share the show. Bear in mind that unfortunately, we do live under capitalism, which means this show and Robbie and myself and Jamarl all require money in order to eat and consume liquids. So please go ahead and donate generously to the show if you can afford to do so. We can use your Rumble rants. Those are the paid ones. We can use your Super Chats. Those are also the paid ones over on YouTube. And also, I want to remind you that we do have the ability to support a little more generously if you're so inclined. Obviously, one-off donations are great. And for many people, those are the best things, the best thing. I know for me, I kind of like that. But you can also pay $5 a month to become a sustaining member of the show. You can that's over on YouTube. Also on YouTube, for $20 a month, you can be thanked in the closing credits of the show. And for $50 a month, you can join JT and Robbie and myself for an exclusive hangout chat that will happen in lieu of the Q&A show on the last Monday of every month. So that's coming up.
Also remember, you can become a $5 a month subscriber over on Rumble. And the advantage for that is that the show keeps 100% of that $5. Rumble does not take a cut. And also you get access to all the premium episodes that are too hot for YouTube over on Rumble.
True. That is true. And there have been a few of those. And mainly, Robbie, that's your fault. Okay.
More
So
often than not.
there's also, so if you are like, would like to pay, if you'd like to do the $20 and the $50 a month sustainer or something else, please go ahead and, PayPal the money. You can subscribe. PayPal has subscriptions. PayPal over to our email address, deprogrampodcast@gmail.com. And you can also come on and when you do that, to make sure you get all the bennies that you deserve, make sure you email at the same time, producer Robbie West. We're going to start putting these, as Trent suggested, we're going to start putting
In
these
the show notes.
into the show notes so that I don't have to keep repeating it. Although not everyone reads the show notes, so I'll probably keep repeating it. Anyway, so definitely contact Robbie. His email is westglaciergaming@gmail.com.
And
Okay.
we have an email question, Ted. This one is for you.
Oh,
So
great.
if you are ready,
I'm always ready.
So, two-part question. Part one, what has changed in the past 5 to 10 years has essentially eliminated protesting? I remember 2016 and 2020 being standout years for protests and rioting. I would think the Iran war would evoke a greater reaction from people. Does this discredit the genuineness of those past protests, or have people just become so apathetic to a solution? And part two, because this will continue to descend into oligarchy until the U.S. balkanizes. As with what happened with the collapse of the Soviet Union, what are your thoughts on the likelihood of the United States balkanizing? These are questions that are submitted by Stephen.
All right, Stephen, thank you very much for both of those questions. And I'll try not to go on too long because they're both very involved questions. So I'll start with the second one first. You know, if the question is, you know, we all think that the U.S. empire is overextended and due for a comeuppance. And the question is, what, I mean, we know it's going to end. The question is when and how. The when, I don't know. The how could either be a revolution. It could be the descent into an authoritarian or even fascist state. I don't think we're going to see a revolution for the simple reason that we don't have a organized left-wing political movement capable of channeling that energy into a revolutionary movement. The caveat there is that because it's much easier than ever to organize people through the internet, it might be possible to effectively have a flash mob revolution. I'm not sure if that's going to happen. We haven't seen one of those. We've certainly seen the internet used for organizing around the world, including here in the US, but we haven't seen it so far. So in terms of, what was that first question again?
The first question is why are we not seeing any protests?
Yeah, so the protests. So protests basically in my lifetime peaked, have been steadily going down. I'm 62. When I was five, it was 1968. It was the peak of the protest movement in the US. And we've seen a steady decline. There was a huge drop off after the end of the Vietnam War up until the early 1980s and Ronald Reagan. I participated in a lot of those early 80s protests at things like Solidarity Day in Washington, D.C. in September 1981. There's photos of me throwing shit at Mayor Ed Koch when he went to visit, when he was greeting President Reagan at Gracie Mansion, framed up proudly on my wall. Why was that initial gap from 1974 to 1981? Well, there was exhaustion and victory, right? At that time, the left had won a lot. The left had won for a large part, liberalism triumphed, right? The civil rights movement, the feminist movement, the LGBT movement, and Stonewall. I don't mean to imply that all that racism, sexism, and homophobia are gone, far from it, but the main big victories seemed to have been achieved and things seemed to largely be moving in the right direction. Reagan kind of showed it wasn't so, and there was a renewed burst of energy, but still nothing like it had been in the 60s. In the 60s, we had an organized left. We had the New Left. We had the Students for a Democratic Society. We had the Black Panthers. We had all sorts of radical movements. We don't have any of that stuff by the 1980s. The peace movement starts getting taken over by what I call the militant pacifists, who basically made sure the protesting was no longer dangerous. The main effect of protesting, as Jamarl would probably say, we can ask him that when he joins us in about 20 minutes, is to put pressure on the authorities, to scare them. The protests really came into their own in the Middle Ages in walled cities, and people would get drunk and go around and burn things and threaten to burn down the entire city when they were unhappy about this and that. And that forced the feudal lords at the time to pay attention and take notice. They could either kill the rioters, which they would do if they could, but if they couldn't, then they had to negotiate with them. So in other words, there has to be either violence or the credible threat of violence as a significant part of your protest movement for it to be effective. I think part of the rise of the peace police and militant pacifism is a huge part of the reason we're not seeing as many protests. The big answer, though, I think, is really look at the buildup to the war against Iraq in 2002, finally culminating with the March 2003 invasion. At that time, you saw millions of people in the United States and hundreds of millions of people around the world marching to stop this war. It had no effect whatsoever. It didn't slow down the war machine whatsoever. And I think that was an incredibly important moment to explain why we're seeing so few protests. It's dispiriting. So, all right, let's summarize. Lack of a leftist organization that's militant and can credibly challenge the authorities. Yes, there are protests like the women's marches and the No Kings rallies and so on, but those protests are not dangerous to the authorities. And when you go and you spend the afternoon, you come away thinking, I just wasted my time. And when people feel that way, they don't come back again. That's a big part of the reason. Also, they just don't seem to be effective. The guy who helped organize Occupy Wall Street, Micah White, he was a editor at Adbusters magazine, and they kind of accidentally ginned up the Occupy Wall Street protests that spread to over 1,000 encampments around the United States. He has written extensively about why he believes protests are an obsolete form of activism. He doesn't seem to have a lot of answer for what comes next. I'm sure he would argue with me, and we should probably invite him onto the show, actually. He's an interesting guy. But there's basically no... Let's invite Micah White. Let's do that. We just have an absence of credible threat to the powers that be. And, you know, when you lose too much, when you mobilize, like in the military, if you mobilize people for soldiers for an attack, and then they are told to stand down, there's not going to be a protest. If you do that too often, you demoralize your troops. Well, similarly, if you mobilize leftists, liberals, progressives to go and march against Trump or a war or whatever, and nothing happens as a result, and the war goes on without any modification whatsoever, you get demoralized. And part of the problem is that we're organizing protests that not only do not, but cannot possibly change things. It's not protesting itself. It's the way we're doing protests that's not working. So I hope that hope goes some way towards answering the question.
Well, it's that. And also, I mean, really, what is the alternative? What y'all are running into on, I guess I would call it the left at this point, I don't really know, and people like me on the right, is the people who are in charge, they all sing from the same sheet of music. Like, there's no difference. If it was President Kamala Harris in the White House right now instead of Donald Trump, we would still be at war with Iran right now. There'd be no difference.
That's true.
And there's no point in protest. Seriously, what are you going to protest? What is your alternative? What is your solution?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the problem, too, is that the two-party trap is also causing people to be demoralized as well. There's nothing worse than telling people, oh, you know, we only protest when we have a Republican in office. But when the very same issue, the very same thing that outrages you happens when a Democrat is in office, you put away your protest signs, and as the saying goes, you go back to brunch. That's going to fuck up your ability to get people motivated. They're just not going to do it.
The problem with Democrats is that they never punch left. That's the problem. They never punch left.
Would you describe punch left?
Well, like, for example, if you
punch left all the time, they punched Bernie Sanders.
No, I mean, so here's what I'm saying. So first of all, Bernie Sanders is a fraud. Let's just call him what he is. If he wasn't a fraud, he's a coward. I mean, he could have caused a ruckus and he didn't. Same with AOC. So what do I mean? So if you're a Democrat and by what I mean by that, like a card-carrying member of the Democratic Party, and you oppose Trump's war, okay, do you really oppose the war, or you just oppose it because Trump started it? Whereas if you have President Kamala Harris, you have the exact same problems, the rising cost of living, an unconstitutional war of aggression against a sovereign state that's wrecking global markets. If you're not willing to punch left against the persons on your team, then what good are you? Are you at that point as a cheerleader? You had a pep rally. You're ineffective and you're dishonest. Now, one thing you can say, you know, at least about the populist right, the whole reason why there is a civil war inside the Republican Party and the right writ large is because people like me punch to the right.
Well, I mean, in fairness to liberals, and I'm going to take your point, but in fairness to liberals, the difference here is substantial. People on the right were invited under Donald Trump to join the GOP, right? You guys are in the tent. You're part of the conversation.
Not anymore.
But you were initially.
Trump calls us Trump calls us Nazis right now. So we are not a part of the tent.
When does he call you Nazis?
Oh, well, he doesn't himself, but his operatives in the media call people like me the woke Reich all the time. Well, what does that mean? If you're a member of the Reich, it means that you're a Nazi. What do you do with Nazis? You don't talk to them. You don't entertain them. You kill them, you fight them, you shoot them, and you use violence to shut them down. You know, when Charlie Kirk was assassinated, people were all the time saying, specifically on the right, say, but calling people Nazis is the problem. People called Charlie Kirk a Nazi and he got shot in the throat. But yet here we are with the establishment Republican class calling people like me members of the woke Reich. What does that mean? And then you have Donald Trump getting on his anemic platform saying, oh, you should go listen to Mark Levin. He's real MAGA. Well, you tell me, what is he saying? He's calling people like me Nazis.
Okay, well, maybe, okay, so maybe tacitly. Okay, I'll give you that. So there's obviously a civil war. The key thing, though, is that there's a civil war within the Republican Party. There's no civil war within the Democratic Party. There is the Democratic Party, which is corporatist and centrist and moderate by its leadership. And yes, there are many millions of progressives and even leftists, even socialists and communists who swallow their tongue and go and vote for them. But they're not in the tent. They're not invited to participate in policy. They're not appointed to positions of power. You don't even get a symbolic seat at the table when you're a progressive. So, I mean, the problem is that lefties, real lefties, are out in the cold. They're disorganized. They are still besotted by the two-party trap and the fear of the mean Republicans and the orange man, and they don't see what's good for them, right? I mean, so they're – but, I mean, look, you hit upon something that's really key, Rappy, which is the, you know, the fact is you can be if you're against war, that's a principle. And you're either for a principle, which is to say a real politics, or you're for a team. So you can support, I mean, I totally say, and I said this in this morning's show, by all means, if you see a political party that for the most part in important ways supports your way your main politics, then you should support that party. You should vote for that party, donate for that party, canvass for that party. But if you don't, even if that party seems quote unquote somewhat less bad than the other party, in this case, the Republicans, you can't support or vote for it. You can have nothing to do with it. And if you want to try to change that party, you got to change it from the outside by forcing them to come to you. You going to the inside means you've already pre-surrendered.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, you know, we had our primaries last week on Tuesday, and the Republican Party of Lafayette County, Montana, a guy called me and said, Robbie, can we count on your support? I laughed at him and I told him, I said, you are exactly what's wrong with the Republican Party. And I said, no, take me off your rolls. You're an anathema to me. Your party is an anathema to me. And I will do everything I can to make sure that you lose. And he's like, well, I thought you were conservative. I said, I'm not conservative. There's nothing here to conserve. I'm a right winger. I want to blow it up and start over. I want a hard reset. We need a progressive right-wing revolution in this country, progressive in the form that we need to try something new, right-wing in the form that we need a smaller government that can no longer hurt us, and we need to have a real populist, real politic where the left and the right, we're just, nope, listen, just forget about the terms, just forget about the labels, just a reset of people just struggling just to even make a living, at least have a seat at the table.
Well, I mean, okay, so one of the things that the populist left, progressive populists have always said, it's even in a newspaper that I'm in, I don't know if it still even exists, progressive populist, they argue that the politics should be people first, people before profits, nation, country before other countries, right? So that's left-wing progressive populism. I think there's the issue. There's going to obviously be in any kind of alliance like you describe tensions, but I do wonder if it would be possible for there to be a right wing. I'll take the word progressive out of it. A right wing and left wing populist alliance that starts with those two principles: normal people first, country first, and then manages to keep out the corporatists, the profiteers, the internationalists, who have been fucking up both major political parties and distracting us from the national interests of the vast majority, not all, but 90% of the public.
Yeah, I don't see why not. I mean, everyone's got to eat. People got to have gas. I mean, listen, if you live in Minnesota and if you want to have abortions, the people of that state vote for it. And people of Montana decide, you know, we would really like to have fully automatic rifles and no abortions. Those are social issues that ultimately are going to take a back seat to whether or not you can afford to eat or pay your rent next month. So let's tackle the bigger issues first. We can iron things out. That's the beautiful thing about federalism. You can have your gay pride parades and I can have my NRA rallies and we can shake hands and be friends at the end of the day.
I mean, that is a question, right? Could we have abortion rights? Could we have gay pride parades? I mean, I think I know a lot of lefties who believe in gun rights or are willing to tolerate them and just say, or maybe say, look, we don't know if you should be able to have a bazooka but certainly some guns are okay. Is it possible to find a compromise there that works?
Well, that's the beautiful thing about federalism. You vote with your feet. If you want to have more lax gun laws, and if that's one of your important issues, go to a state that offers that. If you want to have abortion on demand up to the point of birth, then go to a state that would allow it. It does not have to be a federal one size fits all issue. Let's have a nation, not an empire. Let's have a federal union. Not an impressive central government that dictates every aspect of your life. That's the promise of what America was to begin with. We can always go back to that. Why can't we?
Well, I mean, you know, look, any kind of coalition, especially from far right to far left, is going to have major tensions. And it's like, the thing is, you don't want to tear it apart, right? I mean,
exactly.
It would be a beautiful thing. So everyone would have to come with open hearts and sort of say, listen, we have a lot more in common than the important things we would all have to agree are economic distribution and nationalism, looking out for the country first. And of course, we can all argue about what that means and what that looks like specifically, because that's what politics is arguing about things like that.
Well, the whole point of compromise is that no one ever gets everything they want. Everyone leaves disappointed with what they have. That's the whole point. That's the whole point of compromise. That's what representative government is all about. Everyone gets what they want, you don't have representative government.
Agreed.
But we've got lots more questions now.
All right, let's do them. What's next?
Next one. Thank you from Teg Der. I can't pronounce your name over on Rumble. Who decides which non-paid for live chat comments get featured on the screen? Any particular criteria? It's really kind of easy. It's a two-step system. If a non-paid comment pops up and if I think it's interesting, I feed it to Ted and Jamarl. Then they will go through and then they decide if it's something they want to engage with. So it's a two-tiered system. It is 100% pay for play. It is completely transparent. If you pay, you get read. If you don't, you have to go through three different human beings with different opinions.
Yeah, basically, I think it's fair to say your question will 100% get asked if it is a paid question. If it's an unpaid question, it is likely to be asked. If it's interesting, if it's not something that we've already talked about and already answered, I think is also an important thing.
Yep. Sounds good to me. I think that's a fair thing. And May Blue Funk, thank you for the $2. Hey guys, do you guys think David Graeber was a psyop? The tyranny of consensus feels ineffective. Also, the lack of threat of violence seems like a defanged movement.
Who's David Graeber?
No idea. Never heard of him.
Okay, and we need an explanation there. Okay,
I will check them out right now. I do not know.
Ms. Funk, please let us know. Just a reminder, if you're just joining us, it's now 12:27 Eastern Time on the East Coast. So obviously on the East Coast, Jamarl Thomas will be joining us any minute. And so we were two, and we are two, and soon we will be three. If you have a question, please put it in the live chat in YouTube or Rumble, and we are going to get to it. All right, what's next?
Next up, let me see here. So this is, in the jolly. I mean, dude, we have to schedule protests. This ship was designed. I cannot afford to protest or riot for more than a day. And if I got arrested, my living situation is cooked. Fair.
No, I mean, well, that's the problem, right? I mean, like, people want their rioting and their protesting and their revolutionizing to be convenient. They don't. That's why the No Kings rallies are not scheduled on a weekday when they would actually disrupt traffic and economic activity for the powers that be, and so that many people can attend who normally work Monday through Friday. That's why they're scheduled when the weather is nice. Again, people don't want to be protesting in the middle of a blizzard. Understandable. Human nature. I don't want to be protesting out in the middle, and I don't want to be shot at by violent police officers or beaten up or raped in the county lockup. Those things are not fun. So I totally get it. No one wants to lose their job. No one wants to be inconvenienced. And I don't mean to be snotty or snide about it. It's just true. I don't want to do those things either. The question is, how angry are we? How much do we want it, right? I mean, if we don't want it that much, we ain't going to do much about it.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I get it. I mean, it sucks. Last November, I lost my job, Ted, as you full well know, because someone on this show found who my employer was and doxed me. So yep. Listen, I get it. It sucks. And we're still paying the price for it.
Yeah, that's true.
But no, it is what it is. And Teg, he has did another dollar donation. People could just call me Teg. I appreciate Teg because I am kind of retarded. So I would 100% call you Teg. And then Teg says, I get what Robbie is saying, but Democrat establishment hates anyone to the left of them more than they hate people to the right of them. I agree. That's why they don't like Ted. That's why Ted's not allowed. He's not invited to the big Democratic parties there in Washington State.
Washington, D.C., yeah. No, that's true. I mean, I've always said as a cartoonist and as a writer, I was censored a lot more by The Nation, the Progressive magazine, and the New York Times than I ever was when I worked for Forbes or Fortune magazine.
No, I get it. People don't like it. My biggest fear is ever be captured by confirmation bias. That's why I always like to read foreign media and talk to people who are very much to the left of me.
Yeah, no, I mean, I like talking to people who are. I have more in common with people to the far right than I do with to centrist moderates. Centrists, Democrats, liberals, those people are. What's the nice way to put it? They basically.
They're captured.
Yeah, they're captured. And they don't get it, right? I mean, it's just. They just don't get it. So. And also, they don't believe in anything, really.
Well, of course they do. They try to tell people that people like me are the enemy and that we're a threat and we have to be shut down.
Right. But they don't really. But that's not. You know, that's not really.
Well, that's believing in something.
Well, nothing. It's nothing useful.
Of course not. They're retarded, but still, there is that. Let me see here. Darkworks88, after seeing over and over what governments are capable and willing to do to their people, why do leftists want to be armed with as close to equal force as the government? Why do they not want to be? Like, that's the argument that I made. For example, if you support the Black Lives Matter movement, why in the hell would you ever support gun control? That's the last thing you should ever want is if you truly believe that the government is racist and wants to destroy you because of how you look, the last thing you'd ever want for them to have is a monopoly on force. You want to be as well-armed as I am, if not more.
Look, I agree with that. You know, the thing is that the Black Panther movement was armed. Radicals in the 60s and 70s were armed. I'm going to stipulate that probably you can't, there's no way to out-arm the federal government. But look, every revolution has taken place has toppled a government that had a bigger military than they had, They were always out-armed. They were always out-trained. They were always out-professionalized in terms of military presence, always. Nothing new here. So, look, the answer is real leftists are not at all against gun rights. Real leftists want guns. Real leftists want a gun when an agent of the state comes to arrest and kill them. So I think, you know, this is a conflation of liberals versus the left.
Where do you think that comes from? Like, why do people conflate, and listen, I'm guilty of it, of a leftist with the left? Like, what, who determines, what is the definition?
Well, I mean, look, the thing is that, like, when, you know, the left-right span was defined by the way that the parliamentarians sat in the French during the French Revolution in Parliament. And those people, hey, JT.
We got a real host now.
What's going on, guys?
We're just talking about, like, why do liberals and the left get conflated in the same way that, I guess, why does the right and Republicans and conservatives get conflated? It's shorthand that the press uses, and we all grow up with it. When we're little kids, we're told that Democrats are the left and that Republicans are the right. And, you know, think about how old you are in the United States before you learn, like, hey, you know, there used to be third parties, a lot of them. And, you know, it's like some of them even got elected to stuff. You know, you by the time you learn that, you're like, it's sort of like Gilligan's Island. The third party is anything outside of the Democrats and the Republicans is and the rest. And that's sort of like, I think it's because of propagandizing from childhood.
Yeah. It's more interesting than that. It's like, hey, one of our main political parties used to be a third party. Really? Yeah. The guy even got elected, Abraham Lincoln, the great emancipator, beating the shit out the Whigs. No, I mean, obviously the two political parties have a complete rationale in order to, you know, nixay this idea of a third party, right? It's in their best interest to pretend as if this is a mythical thing. It's only two parties. Yeah, no. And we're not better off for it, frankly. What's in the best interest of the political parties is different than what's in the best interest of the country. And that tension is always there. I mean, we run into a problem when obviously the political parties just kind of do what's in their own interest to the detriment of everyone else. By the way, a good example of this would be debates. Debates were considered to be sacrosanct, meaning there is no, you know, it's like your election season has primaries and you have debates. And what happened? You got many political actors that were like, yeah, we don't really need to do that anymore. When Donald Trump was in lead, what did he say? Yeah, I don't need to do this. I don't need to have these debates. I'm 30 points up. What does it matter? Now, obviously, what he's saying is, I don't want to F up in a way that I can lose my standing of being 30 points ahead. When Sanders was 60 points ahead, he still had the debate with the guy. Meaning he did it because of governance reasons. Because it's one of those things that's paramount to governance. If you notice, Harris, Joe Biden, they didn't feel the need to debate. And after a certain point, Trump and Harris was like, yeah, we're out. We're done. That's amazing. All of these things are new, at least new to my awareness. Correct me if I'm wrong. You're the better student of history, Ted.
No, I mean, that is true. I mean, it's like we know that the ladies, League of Women's Voters, used to sponsor the debates in the modern era. And then this is actually the Democrats' fault, as so many things are, where the Democrats decided to scrap and kicked out. They kicked the league to the curb and because they didn't want Ralph Nader to participate in the debates. So they created the Commission on Presidential Debates. They went to the Republicans and they said, hey, why don't we do this without the league and their silly rules? We can do this in a bipartisan way. Republicans agreed because, hey, they get challenged from the right too sometimes by people like Ross Perot. So they were like, yeah, we can, you know, we'll just have a duopoly work together and exclude third party candidates. In order for a third party candidate to be invited to the debate, he or she has to get at least 15% of the polling in three major national polls in the immediate run-up to the debate. So you're talking about someone has to scale from 0 to 15% of the national vote without a party apparatus, without any oxygen in the media, without any coverage, by being ridiculed and lambasted, and by being after most Americans are told that if you vote for one of these parties, you're silly and you're wasting your vote. That's a pretty hard, bar to achieve, which is why nobody has.
And that's assuming the polling is even accurate. I mean, right. There are so many assumptions built into this that this is like the impossible hurdle. And to make it even worse, the only way that's going to take place is with money and cash, and a lot of it would put you in the same boat as the other political comrades who are in the other political parties who are also functioning on cash. Meaning, I don't need to be God Emperor. I need to be the person paying God Emperor. If that makes sense, right? Because I get what I want when I'm funding God Emperor, but I don't need to take the punches and everything else. God Emperor could be my avenue to the rest of the public. You never even see me. You don't even know I exist under normal circumstances.
Anderson does. I mean, she owns a president.
Miriam Adelson.
Yeah, she owns him. Lock, stock. She has got his balls in a cast iron vise, and she knows it, and he knows it.
Yeah.
Hey, Trump, I need you to lick my ass.
Okay. Yes, if that's a good looking ass, can't wait to. Let me get in.
I know, right?
Yum,
I know, right? I was like, give me $50 million. Woo!
Yeah, we're in. All right, let's have another question.
All right, so next question is going to be, this is more of a statement from John Park over on YouTube. What's the next premium episode topic going to be? I think it would be interesting to hear your guys' opinions on past presidents like JFK. Was he really that cool, or was it just all hype and not great?
Let's ask everyone.
Went to the goddamn moon. That's all. Went to the goddamn moon.
We did go
to the moon. I don't give a shit what else happened.
That doesn't make him great. That means he wasted a bunch of money to go to a rock.
Whatever. That's a religious argument. That's not a reality argument.
That is not a religious argument. Would that money have been better spent investing in infrastructure in the 1960s and actually doing something about fighting the racial inequality that's going on in the South, as opposed to building a rocket and going to
Nobody
a floating rock?
Nobody was going to do that. Nobody was ever going to do that. Meaning, it's one thing if you postulated against something that actually happened in real life. The reality of it is science, innovation, technology, all of those things are entirely beneficial to the way this country operates moving forward. Many of the devices that they were using to go to the moon had to be miniaturized, which allowed it to be funneled back into our own society in regards to technology and technological innovation.
But that would have happened anyway through the military.
Why would you think that would have happened? There would have been no need for it. Going to the moon was the need for it. When we saw Sputnik, and Ted can give his opinion on this. When the U.S. saw Sputnik in space, it freaked out the entirety of the apparatus, meaning the political and military apparatus. Oh, my God, the Soviets are going to rain missiles down on America. That's what they were thinking. It freaked them out. There are speeches where Kennedy is being asked by media. You think media today is radically different? It's not. Kennedy, we're supposed to be the greatest country on earth. How's the Soviets putting a satellite in space? Are the Soviets going to rain missiles on America? How did they get this gap in technological capability? And there are speeches and interviews where Kennedy is standing there looking flat-footed, trying to explain they jumped ahead of us.
Satellites and ballistics are one thing. I'm talking about going to the moon to go collect some rocks.
But it wasn't to collect some rocks. It was a military activity.
To what goal? To see who can put the flag on this place of the atmosphere first, and there's no gravity?
I know Kennedy made this argument about freedom and justice and liberty and space and all this other stuff. Going to the moon was a military decision. It was less about just putting a flag somewhere. It was about the ability to get into space and to show dominance in that theater. Now, you can disagree with it. You can say that money was wasted.
It was wasted.
Okay. I disagree with you on that.
We disagree on a lot. We'll just chalk this up to the long list.
Which is fine. But I radically disagree with you on this. Went to the goddamn moon. Why does, like, that is a radical thing. That's a radical thing. That's not a minor thing. That's a phenomenal thing in regards to the capability of us going from zero to the moon. That is not minor. That is an achievement that will stand, from my point of view, the test of the time.
I mean, if you're able to do something when you got there, like, for example, mining or something, or figuring out, you know, just some kind of a use, so that way, instead of just pillaging our entire planet, I can see where you're coming from. They went there. They were tourists. They hung out for a couple hours, picked up some rocks, and then came home. They did nothing about you. They did nothing about you.
What do you mean they didn't learn anything? What do you mean they didn't learn anything? The very process of getting there is a learning experience.
No, I didn't say they didn't learn anything. I said they achieved nothing of value.
Again, learning is value. Real knowledge, real information of the scientific in our world, in our universe, is valuable. Flat out. Full stop.
Look, I think you're both right. I mean, here's the thing. If the United States had the money to help the poor and build more infrastructure in the 60s and to go to the moon, we could do both. We didn't decide to do one instead of the other. But I got to say, with Robbie, if we'd had more limited resources, if we hadn't been as spectacularly wealthy and we could only afford to do one, I'm on Team Robbie. You can't justify morally the fact letting people hurt and not get treated for diseases and not feed their families while you're going off to collect rocks. At the same time, it is also true. Look, you know, the gain might not be something that you see for another 100 years, but there's going to be knowledge. I do happen to think that space exploration should be a global matter. It should be a one apparatus that is one unified but for the planet, so that all the rich countries kick in and work on it together, and all of their scientists can cooperate, right? It's a little silly that we have individual private and national space programs. I don't really understand that.
We have people going bankrupt because they can't afford their medical bills while we're funding NASA. I'm sorry, while there is one family in this country that's being strangled by debt or being destroyed by the inability to get insulin, or you're going to freaking die, that we're going to fund NASA. So in the hierarchy of priorities, you got to take care of the home folks first, and then you can let the nerd play with his rocket. If you can't do that, then NASA should be disbanded. It should be ended today.
How much? Answer me a question. How much do we spend on NASA?
Nowhere near enough.
No. You said it should be disbanded.
100%.
How much do we spend on NASA?
Hold on, I will check for you. Just 1 second here. What is the budget of NASA?
You don't even know, which is my point. We spend a tiny, tiny, tiny amount on NASA.
Correct.
In comparison to the budget of the United States.
Yeah, this is like the arguments about the National Endowment for the Humanities, right?
Yeah, so NASA currently gets $24.9 billion. How much would it cost, Jamarl, to get insulin for every person in this country that doesn't have it?
We give Israel nearly that much.
Israel gets $5 billion a year. NASA gets $24 billion.
Add in the amount of money that we just gave them for the wars over the last 2 years.
No, I agree with you. Listen, I agree with you on that.
It's a drop in the bucket in regards to the amount of money that we spend on random shit.
How much would it cost to get insulin for every person in this country that needs it, that can't afford it?
Robbie, we can afford to do that. You read my book. You know we can afford to do that.
I know we can.
Yeah. And do you think it gets?
So if resources are scarce, maybe you should prioritize the people that live here first.
Robbie, we spent $10 trillion on the Iraq and Afghanistan war. Are you being serious right now?
Yeah, I agree
with you. How much should we spend in Ukraine? I could go down the list of this stuff.
My mom,
I'm pointing out this is a drop in the bucket in regards to what we spend.
I understand that.
Robbie, my mom used to have this expression, l'un n'empêche pas l'autre. One doesn't prevent the other. We can do both. But I agree that if you can only do one, obviously.
But you can't do both. We're $40 trillion in debt.
We can do both.
Are you serious right now? Is that really the argument that's being made? We're $40 trillion in debt. That $20 billion is nothing in the context of that.
No, listen, I agree with you. I mean, listen, and if we get rid of NATO, I have no problem going to Mars. If we shut down all our foreign military bases, we can do all these things. But we're not. America's empire.
If you do that, you will still be here making the argument that we shouldn't be funding NASA because there are still hungry people, even if you get rid of NATO.
No, because then you have the resources built and reprovisioned to actually take care of those folks.
Robbie, $20 billion in the context of the $40 trillion that we spend, or in the context of the trillions we spend a year on random shit, is nothing. It's a rounding error, for God's sake.
Yep. I hear what you're saying. I just disagree with you.
And by the way, if it was one or the other, I would agree with you also. Meaning,
it's
if it's
one or the other,
should we go to the moon or should we feed people? I said, obviously, we should feed people.
It is one or the other. We have people. We have people who are hungry right now on the streets of the United States of America, and we are putting billions of dollars into NASA and into the International Space Station, which now has an oxygen leak. What's the point? Who cares?
We're going in circles here. Let's keep going. Let's move on.
Yeah, fair enough.
I care. If you ask me who.
Who cares? Because let me see here. John Parks again. That needs to be on a damn T-shirt. JT, we went to the fucking moon.
We went to the fucking moon.
Well, that's like the cover of the Onion did like a fake historical covers thing, and it's like, man lands on the fucking moon.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah,
on stage, come out from behind the scene. Yeah.
Let me see here. And Ramrod. Robbie hates NASA so much because going to space means we might find extraterrestrial life, and that means more aliens. Listen, I think aliens are a real thing. That doesn't frighten me at all.
Went to the fucking moon. I want that T-shirt.
Maybe we get Trent to make one.
Can Trent make me that T-shirt?
We went to the fucking moon. If you're watching.
Let's see here. What else is floating around here? Focusing on something entirely unimportant after the other shit, dude. NASA is like half a cent of your daily tax dollar. Well, listen, I agree with you. I mean, in the hierarchy of things, listen, the argument that I'm making is as long as there is one family in this country, we should not be involved in military alliances. We shouldn't be doing any of this extra crap. That's the argument that I'm making. You take care. If your roof has holes in it, you don't go renew your gym membership.
Look, if
that's worried, the point that I'm trying to make.
Robbie, if you're worried about the national debt and you think we're spending too much, look, you got to start with the biggest expense first, right? And you look at that and you're like, well, what is our biggest expense? Turns out it's all a waste, the defense budget, right? So start with that, $1.5 trillion a year. You can pretty much reduce that by 99%, and you're not only A-OK, you're better off and you're safer because you're not making enemies all over the world. So, like, start with that.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Listen,
you'll get down. If you get down, you keep cutting and you're still broke. You keep cutting and you're still broke and you still can't feed the poor, and you get down to the NASA budget and the NPR budget and the arts budget. By all means, cut those two. But, you know,
and I would agree with you at that point.
Yeah.
I would agree with you at that point. I would be like, hey, we have a rational government. The government's trying to deal with this real affairs. We can't afford this shit. Fair enough. That's not what we are.
I mean, I don't understand why we have a military war with 200,000 men. We have two huge oceans on either side of us.
Trent says he'll make the moon shirt as long as the printing service allows profanity.
Okay, it doesn't have to say.
I have a picture of Jamal, like, in a space suit, like Neil Armstrong.
For sure.
I have so many. I don't know if you've ever seen my screensaver. All these images would be like me holding the Ten Commandments, me going into a black hole, just all this random shit. One of those may work. It doesn't have to say fucking moon. We went to the goddamn moon or something like that. That just makes sounds like awesome shit.
I like it. I'm sure someone will allow the obscenity. I used to wear my Dead Kennedys Too Drunk to Fuck T-shirt all over the place. From
what?
nobody was pleased.
Too drunk to fuck.
Yeah, it's a song. Went to a party, danced all night. I drank 16 beers and started up a fight. But now I'm jaded. I'm out of luck. I'm rolling down the stairs too drunk to fuck.
Oh, that's hilarious. I've never been that drunk.
You don't want to be that drunk. You don't want to.
No.
I can honestly say I've never been drunk.
Really? Not once?
I've never drank.
Well,
at all.
Yeah, it's hard to get drunk if you don't drink. Yeah.
Never have. See, and then Roguebot says, we are trillions of dollars in debt because we wasted money on wars that only profited a few and had no benefits to the U.S. population at all. 100%. That's why I am America first.
Agreed.
Agreed. Agreed.
And so, Matina, Robbie, what if we're actually praying to aliens? Well, we are praying that. By definition, we are. Because, like, no matter what. Yeah.
Are we?
Of course.
Why, of course?
Well, because what's the definition of an alien? Someone or something that's not from where you are. Well, every religion teaches that a god or a deity or whatever it is that you're praying to lives outside of where you are. They live in another realm, another dimension, heaven, whatever else it is you want to call it. So by the definition, that is an alien. Like, God is an alien. He's not from here. An alien, like an angel or a demon, is an extraterrestrial life form. A deity, by definition, is an extraterrestrial life form. So, yeah, you are praying to an alien.
Well, not all deities, right? I mean, some deities, like a wood nymph, lives in a tree.
Yeah, but where did they come from?
That's the interesting part. That's what I'm interested in this one, from your point of view. Yeah. Let me tell y'all something. And you, Ted, I think you're going to completely disbelieve me in this case, but it is true. Meaning what I'm saying is true. The interpretation of it can be different. You know, I used to be very New Agey when I was younger. And the being into UFOs is the least interesting aspect of that New Agey stuff. Everything from remote viewing to out-of-body experiences, including things like guides. This was one of those things I came across when I was a kid. And going into like meditative states and everything else, I have met what is commonly considered a quote-unquote guide. She gave me her name. She says, I'm your expositor. I had no idea what expositor meant. I had to actually go look it up. I've seen her multiple times over the course of my life, engaged with her several times, but very rarely was I in full waking consciousness, if that makes sense. Once I was, but the conversation was short. I have no idea what she is. I don't even know if this is she. I just know she, when I engage with her, I have a sense of her, if that makes sense. I have a feeling of her in that sense. And there was even this merger of sorts that took place in an out-of-body state where the two intertwine, intermingle. I have no idea what that is, right? Now, my mom would say an angel. I would say that's a religious concept. I don't accept the angel thing. And some people would say, okay, well, most of the UFOs that they encountered or the aliens were energetic, not physical, if that makes sense. And many of the experiences that people have are things with non-physical. I'm curious on how Robbie sees this. I mean, what would you see? I accept this kind of like Picard. What sort of being are you?
Yeah.
And I just leave it at that.
Well, the word angel, all that means is a messenger. You know, and just, you know, an angel could be a preacher, and an angel could be an extra dimensional thing. These are things that we know. Like, we know, for example, like the Bible talks about, you know, Gabriel and Michael. They have two different roles.
But you accept this? This is 100%. Okay.
No, listen. I'm going to say something that I've only told Ted in a premium episode that we have. I actually had an encounter with my guardian angel. I actually heard this being speak to me. And the context is, it was the last week that I was at home before I left. My dad was drunk. He brought a guy home with him from the bar, and this dude tried to rape me. Like, he had his hands down my pants. I mean, he was just a raving drunk ass homo. I was maybe 9 years old. My left arm was broke. There was no way I could have fought this guy off. My dad broke my arm just a week earlier. And I remember I was crying and didn't know what to do. And God is my witness, strike me down if I'm lying to you. I felt this wind, and I was in a little shabby trailer. This dude flew across the room, smashed through the wall, and just started just convulsing. He's being electrocuted. And I heard this voice, just as real as the two of y'all talking to me right now. It said, Robbie, get up, go to your granddad's house. And I couldn't tell if it was a man or a woman. I don't know.
Okay.
And it was just, I remember saying, I'm scared. He said, don't be scared. I'm with you. Get your bike. Go to your granddad's house. So you're going to be okay. So I got on my bike. I went to my granddad's. And I told him what had happened. And my grandfather, who's a Methodist preacher, he said, that was your angel protecting you. I never saw that guy again. I have no idea what happened to him. He has vanished like off the face of the earth. He was never seen again. Huh?
Have you ever heard the voice again?
No.
Have you asked for the voice again?
No.
Why not?
Because an angel is a messenger.
Right.
So this being did his job. And listen, I know it sounds crazy, and people who are out there are going to say,
no, I don't think it sounds crazy. I'm fascinated by this.
No, but I'm telling you, that a lot of people, though, will. But basically, like from my experience, because I remember I was young, and just a week later, I left home. And because I was going to shoot my dad. I was going to murder my father. I was going to shoot that man. And it was either I had to leave or something was going to happen. So I left. And I left.
No, I'm glad you left.
I am too.
And I'm glad.
But the point that I'm trying to make is like, I have no formal education. Like I got through like seventh grade middle school, and I learned how to read, you know, using a Bible. And the reason why I never tried to contact the being again was, one, it's a angel, a created being, serves at the pleasure of God. He did what he was supposed to do. And so why go to the middleman? I guess that's the whole reason that I'm not a Catholic, right? Like, I don't need to go to Mary if I can go directly to God himself. If God needs an operator, he's not God.
Well, okay, two things. One, I accept your experience. Yep. First thought.
Well, it was real.
I accept the experience, right? As somebody who just pointed out my guide, as whatever she calls herself, expositor, whatever, I accept your experience.
Yep.
Two, the problem, if I would call it a problem, with taking this in a religious context is exactly that. The angel did her job or his job. Yep. I don't need to make contact again. This is the end of this experience. And from my Correct. Point of view, that is the beginning of the experience. That is the beginning where you interrogate what the fuck just took place, because it's fascinating.
Well,
A is supernatural in the way that we can be normal. Two, you're framing it a particular way, but we need to accept that the frame is unclear because we have limited knowledge. Meaning, when I point out, at 19, when I had the experience, my first thought was, this is a guide. This is a spirit guide.
Yep.
As I got older, I was like, I don't know what the F that was or who she was, even though she comes across as an older woman that I have a reverence of sorts for. When I saw her again, the same thing. Who are you? What is your name? To which she responded, you know who I am. And she bailed. Like, right. For me, this is interrogation of an experience of something that that any of us can encounter through meditative work and those type of things, and try to push for the beat up of sorts. But what it is, I'm unclear on.
Well, psychedelics, I believe what they do, I can't prove this. I think what that does, that tears down the barrier between the dimension that we live in and what lives outside of where we are, and allows us to start seeing things we're not intended to ever see. That's why they're so popular.
I don't want to be whacked out doing it. I want to be in conscious. I will tell you something else. Part of the reason that I started doing OBEs was to make contact.
What's an OBE?
Out of body experience, where your conscious mind kind of leaves the body of sorts.
And a meditation.
Engage. Yes. No, you're awake. And you do, it's almost like, imagine if your physical body just stopped.
Yep.
And yet you're still awake and moving about the world. You can still see, you can still hear. You are engaging. Sometimes you're still in the physical matter reality dimension of sorts. Other times you're not. It can get very strange. when you're in the state, you can leave the state consciously at times. So there are some people who have lucid dream states and they move from lucid dream states. You can also leave from a conscious state. My goal was conscious OBE, where there is no break in consciousness and making contact. That was my objective. I failed in that objective, but that was the objective. The OBE was true. That part worked, meaning there was this ability to get out the body. It felt like your heart was beating 150 times a minute, even though your heart wasn't beating faster at all. But basically, that was your energetic body, you becoming aware of it. You hear like a vacuum cleaner, like it's very loud, the sounds and everything else. It's almost like this transitional state. Sometimes you hear things talking to you. Sometimes your body's freaking out, and it freaks out in a way that produces these kind of sound things to try to basically keep you in your body. There are some people who's like, I got out of body and there was a dog sitting on my chest. Okay, you're scared to death. And your body is trying to stop you from leaving. Robert Monroe got stuck because he was afraid. Like, meaning your fears can be projected back at you in this case. I remember opening or seeing the room, even though my eyes were closed. And I'm trying to tell myself, keep it cool. Don't freak out. You had an objective. Work towards the objective, that type of thing. Either way, I was panicking and I fell back into my body. My point is, you can inspect these things. It's not something that is one-off. Anybody can do it. Anybody can get good at it, providing that people practice at it. You can interrogate those experiences, which is what I'm getting at with the guardian angel. Obviously, it was something that was in your life. I would categorize it as a guide, quote unquote, whatever that means. Obviously, this was not an experience that you were supposed to have and that was getting involved. Then I know I'm sounding very religious-y right now, but anybody can have an OBE. Anybody can remote view. Anybody can, at the very least, attempt to meet their guide in this kind of weirdness. So I'm fascinated by your experience. I just wish you would have pride. Investigate.
I did. Believe me, I did. I mean, I did a deep dive all through the Bible and stuff, and just reading about it and studying it. And I guess what it is I don't believe that an angel, for lack of a better word, is a rogue actor. Like this being just following me around. Like, so it's a hierarchy. So it's just like, okay, so there's a greater authority. So think about that in terms of military, right? Like, you have your general, and then you're going to have your angels. And then
this is going off the rails. I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. He's just sitting there being bored. He's fine. But I just think that's just how it happens. I just think that you're assigned an angel, and that angel just will just watches over you and guides you until your time is up. And that's one of the reasons why, like, I'm not really particularly afraid of death. It's just we have a finite number of days. Once your allotted days are up, then you're done. It doesn't matter what it is that you're doing. You can be an old man in your bed. You can be 20 years old and catching a bullet in Ukraine, or you can be driving down the road in your car. Once your time is up, your time is up. And it doesn't matter how fast it is that you run. Like, you're done.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of old men knee deep in 20-year-old.
Yeah. So Ted, have you ever had an experience like that, an experience that you cannot explain?
Yes, I have, but it's going to have to wait for the next Q&A show because we're so out of time. We're over.
Are we? What time is it? I mean, I haven't even seen the time.
It's over and I got to scoot.
It's 11:05.
I got to go. I know. I'm a baby. But we got to go. Thanks, everyone. I do. I promise we'll put a bookmark in that and get back to it. Thanks everyone for joining us. Interesting conversation. Thanks for liking, following, and sharing the show. JT and I will be back tomorrow morning with Robbie, of course, at 9 a.m. Eastern time, as we are Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. Eastern time. Thank you very much, and we will talk to you guys tomorrow. Bye.
Have a good one, all.
Bye, y'all.